Welcome once again to the Agents Angle, looking into the often misrepresented and misreported world of the football agents. With me, Jonathan Booker.
And me, Pete Palaiologos. On this episode of the Agents Angle, we ask the question whether football has enough agents or too many, and whether it's likely to be in balance around the globe and suitable football agent representation. Plus, for this episode, we take a look at the impact of Liga MX and Mexican football from a Mexican agents and agency perspective.
And unfortunately, we have to report on the unsavoury side of football as we look at a story of racism that may well impact some agents and their work.
All that to come on this episode of The Agent's Angle.
So hopefully we have it agreed this week, and there is a swear jar at the ready, that we're not going to utter those four letters or the related four words that have hijacked the show on many occasions and have plagued us and many others now for weeks, months, if not years. And with that, we also endeavour to steer clear of any agent regulatory matters for this episode. So for now at least, no more circulars. Thank you, FIFA.
Yes, we need a pause on the show regarding talking about any agent regulations. It's obviously the current January transfer windows on board. It's a key period for agents. And anticipate we'll be hearing a lot of new agent-related stories coming up in this period. What I will say in this window, anecdotally, and what I've been involved in, but also been hearing from a lot of agents, is less player deals, more loans. Club requests are very specific. They're very careful what they're seeking in this period and also what agents they're working with. And also, I've seen on LinkedIn, Jonathan, that people are putting on LinkedIn requirements for players.
Yeah, personally, I don't think it's the best approach for that recruitment of players, but we're in an uncertain time. And sadly, Peter, this week we're going to start with a story that is a bit unsavoury and very unwelcome. And I think it is a sad reflection, not just on football, but also some parts of society. And although we touched on a, shall we say, racist undertone in the treatment of Victor Osimhen on social media back in episode 14, we would like to think that action was more down to naivety and stupidity and a lack of thought rather than blatant racism. But this story does seem to be a case of the latter and clear and blatant racism. And it's reported in an article by John Cross in the Mirror newspaper in the UK, dated the 11th of January this year, 2024. But what I would say in this instance is that the reporting agent and the journalist do a lot of stories on agent matters together, so the relationship must be a close one. Now, the club reportedly is a Turkish club, which isn't named in the article, but there are various sources who've stated the same club. And to address the main crux of the matter, it's reported in the article that the club or a club representative has sent a message to the agent stating it would not, and I quote, do business with black people.
Jonathan, this is very obviously concerning conduct. I'll summarise the quick takes from the article and I'll quote directly like you did, because I think we have to be careful with this sort of allegation. Turkish football is facing a new shame after an emerged club refused to deal with an agent because he is black. And we're talking about an agent, Sky Andrew, an English agent, one of football's, at least in England's, best known agents. And in the article, he quotes, he received another WhatsApp message saying the club would not use him or any other black agents. And as you mentioned, it was a Mirror article, and Andrew told the Mirror very clearly, there are many good young black agents in global football and shouldn't be held back from working because of the colour of their skin. This kind of behaviour is just unacceptable. Very clear. I think all of us agree with what Mr. Andrew said there. It's sad to see this, and it's totally unacceptable. I mimic those words. I mean, I have heritage from the Balkan area of Europe, Balkans, and have seen a lot of worrying incidents involving clubs there, different types of incidents. But this Mirror article really leaves the region's football culture with a negative reputation, and that's not good. And I know there are a lot of passionate, good people in that region of the world. All I'll say is it's a shame.
I doubt this is the only such case, whether in Turkey or elsewhere, as there are some really questionable attitudes demonstrated by people all over the world like this. But this is, from what I can gather, attributed to one person, not necessarily a club as a whole, and therefore we shouldn't brand a club as being racist, let alone a league, or indeed a nation. If that was the case, everyone associated with English football, where I am, could be labelled as a racist thug, given the cases of hooliganism and racism that have been associated with English football at times. But it certainly doesn't reflect the majority of people. What I don't want to do is get bogged down too much in the socio-cultural, if not political, aspects of this issue, as there are people who can speak on it far more eloquently and in a far more informed manner than I can. But it is important that we highlight it. This is, for many, as we've repeatedly stated on many episodes, an international business with a wide spectrum of different cultures, nationalities and races involved. There are going to be cultural clashes, stereotypes and bias demonstrated at times, but I would have liked to think that people demonstrate professionalism and are increasingly more aware of their actions and make every effort to correct such actions or avoid them in the first place. Now, the flip side of this particular story is that such attitudes, I would argue, actually hold the associated club back and damage them. If someone at the club demonstrates that blinkered, if not vile, attitude, they are arguably limiting not just the agents they engage with and do business with, but also possibly the talent and players they may be looking to recruit. And the football world is a small one. Although not reported in this article, others are aware of who this club is claimed to be, and the damage is possibly therefore done. Plus, as you rightly said, this is one of the most well-known names in the agency world in England and has a very high profile in media circles. So for me, this is a big mistake by the club, or at least one person there. Could it see black players and players from other races and regions not wanting to go there? Or even any such players who are there at the moment requesting to leave? It's hugely damaging to the club's recruitment and their profile, their image and their reputation. Yes, some agents and players will be, no doubt, as we say, be blinded by the check and do business with the club. But some may well choose not to do so if they have other options, or even, dare I say, use the reputation of the club against them in negotiations as leverage.
Sometimes it's just one person at the club that may engage in this type of behaviour. Maybe management have given them a bit of leeway, they've enforced codes of conduct, or the codes of conduct are loose, or professionalism, and this can, you know, one person can undo a club's reputation. Apparently, in this article, the issue was trust a certain type of people. Now, I find that quite ridiculous in the sense that only, you know, certain people can be trusted, certain people with other backgrounds can't. Trust is a big issue in business, but it can never apply to any demographic group. Now, a lot of players will have a mix of agents, and some of their agents will be of black background or from Africa, or it doesn't matter. The key is for clubs to negotiate with a transparent agent who understands the business, the way to do deals, the way to present players, the way to respond in communications. Any other factor as to their background demographically is totally irrelevant, I would say. And it's a big mistake by this club and other clubs or other people working in clubs to have that sort of mindset.
Sadly, we talk, I think, too often about the less palatable side of football, Peter, on this podcast, and how it strays into the agency world, whether it be the actions or attitudes of agents, players, managers, club execs, fans, or anyone else. And to put it quite bluntly, there are some very unsavoury characters in football. And I have to say, I wouldn't deal with some of them by choice, but this isn't based on the colour of their skin, their nationality, or anything else of that nature. Yes, I probably could have a bit of bias on what agency they align to or how they've conducted business in the past in how I actually work with them. But for me, there are black agents who are bad news and there are white agents who are bad news, as there is with agents of other ethnicities, just as much as there are good agents of whatever race, creed, colour and nationality. Thankfully, it seems that the licensing of football agents by FIFA, however, doesn't demonstrate such racism based on colour of an applicant's skin. Yes, we've spoken in past episodes about the availability of exam study materials and the exam itself just being available in three languages, but I think that more down to laziness and retaining past practice on FIFA's part. But it does beg the question whether there is a fair and adequate balance of agents around the world to facilitate the players and clubs in those various regions that need agency representation. And we've done a bit on this topic of football agent numbers in the past, but what prompted me to think about this were two articles that I recently saw. The first is actually not football related, but cricket related, and it was by Owaz Sharif, AsiaNet News, on the 24th of December 2023. And it was reporting that the Pakistan Cricket Board was considering implementing regulations restricting agents to representing no more than two or three players simultaneously. Now, it's an interesting concept, but I dread to think how that would go down with agents in football if FIFA dared suggest such a restriction. But the second article was a very brief article, and it was entitled Zimbabwe has six licensed football agents. It was in Pindula News on the 10th of January this year, 24. And I think this was to coincide with the FA there informing people of the next FIFA agent exam. And this has been done by many other national member associations in recent communications. Now, I'll be quite honest, Peter, I don't know much about Zimbabwean football. I did have an inquiry about football mediation in disputes from somebody at the association a few months ago. And I think from a player perspective, most people's knowledge will struggle to go beyond the names of Bruce Grobbelaar and Peter and Love. So I can't really make a qualified determination whether six football agents in Zimbabwe is too few or too many. Player-wise, although arguably not big names, their national team has some players currently signed to clubs in the likes of the English Premier League, Ligue 1, Serie A, and the MLS. But it does beg the question, how well balanced are the licensed agent numbers around the world? We're gathering the license numbers as well we can from the various jurisdictions. It isn't easy, as some national football associations are quite open and others are less so with sharing that information. So FIFA, we know you listen to the show. So in your absence as guests from the show, if you want to send us some data on that, it would be very welcome, not just for us, but also the listeners. From England currently, arguably the largest single nation market for football agents, my research shows on the 3rd of January 2024, just a few days after the new national football agent regulations came into force, there were approximately 750 licensed FA agents in England. Then by the 15th of January, there were approximately 900 licensed FA agents. So that's roughly an increase of 20% in 12 days. And that's understandable as more people register given the recent changes.
That's interesting with England, I would say. They just have, what, 2,500, 3,000 intermediaries, Jonathan?
There's been a lot more than that at times.
Okay. So in terms, that looks like a reduction in the sense, but still a big number, FIFA agents or FA agents, we can call them that. I don't know much about the Pakistan scenario, but I sense, having known a bit about cricket, being based in Australia, they're trying to control powerful agents having too big a portfolio of the best players and too much sway. So they don't want someone to have eight Pakistan test cricketers or one day players or players who are playing in all 2020 leagues that are very profitable. So as you said, I can't see that happening in football, but here in cricket, they're trying to maybe keep in check the powerful agents, as there are powerful agents in so many other sports, as we know. Now, in terms of the number of agents worldwide, I've been doing some digging. As of October 2023, I think we've raised previously on the show, 5,500 worldwide, probably grown, and it may grow again, obviously, in the May exam. I made a few inquiries with members of the FIFA Agents Working Group, and they confirmed to me that there's no numbers right now in terms of each country. It hasn't been classified. So you can only go by surnames and do those searches, but you cannot bring it down granular to a country. So we can't get those numbers. Zimbabwe, and I read that article, has five legacy. So there would have been five licensed agents previously, and one has passed the exam, which is very low. And having spoken to a committee member of the African Football Agent Association, the pass rate in the last exam was very low in the African region, as it was elsewhere in the world, you know, anecdotally. So that's obviously had an impact on Zimbabwe and other countries, the number of agents. We do know that there are quite a few agents in the big five European markets. You mentioned England. You know, Italy and France, they've got national systems, so they'll retain those number of agents they had, a lot of them at least. Spain and, of course, Germany now. We've got the German issue, but at the end of the day, there would be a lot of agents. As there would be Brazil and Argentina, we'll have quite a few. In Australia, I calculated there are about 20, bit less, because maybe I know nearly everyone here cheekily, so I can sort of do a who's in, who's out sort of analysis. Now, you mentioned the introduction. We're going to one of the countries where we're really fascinated with, Mexico. Before we do that, I want to go into an article about Mexican agents, because we've mentioned a number of agents. There's an older article, so I don't know the current state of affairs. It was from a few years ago. It's a 2021 article entitled, In Liga MX, there are 111 agencies or player representatives, and there are only 12 FIFA agents. January 2021 from Archie Sports. And this article just basically provides a tapestry of the Mexican agent scene. And without me quoting fully or directly, there were 111 soccer agencies back in 2021 operating in Liga MX, and only 12 FIFA agents registered, which is quite interesting. So there's a lot of agencies, but not as many FIFA agents registered. Now, of the 478 players registered in Liga MX, half are with the top 10 agencies. And I'll go very briefly who are the top agencies. Promafoot, 12% of the market, with its CEO Eduardo Hernandez. He's a FIFA agent. There are other big agencies, Elite Sports and Pits Group. And then some other smaller agencies, fourth and fifth, Our Sports and Latin Quarry. Very interesting name. But I will say this, I want to talk about some individual agents. Visible by Alan Barron, they have some of the best valued footballers in Mexican football. And Jose Juan Macias of Elite Sports is the one who's made a lot of the expensive signings in Liga MX and also some transfers to MLS. So there's some of the big agencies. The key here is, what's the role of agencies in Mexico? Besides the domestic players, it's the international players. They screen players abroad because the clubs don't have the scouting infrastructure to identify those talents in other countries. So they've got a crucial role, I would say, scouting and identification role as much as a negotiation role in Mexico. And now I think we should turn to our guest, Jonathan, from Mexico.
A country of two amazing previous FIFA World Cups, the exciting Liga MX and its historic clubs, and the monumental Azteca Stadium. Our guest today is Maria Garcia Cornelio Alvarez. Maria has a law degree from the Universidad of Araujo and a master's degree in sports direction and management from the Pompey Fabra University in Barcelona. She's also a member of the Sports Appeal and Arbitration Commission. Maria is a licensed FIFA football agent and an alumni of the FIFA Executive Program in Football Agency. Maria constantly advises on football transfer market activities in Mexico and undertakes a lot of work for Mexican players, coaches, and some of the big Mexican football player agencies. She's currently at the firm Betinga Asesores in Mexico. Maria, welcome to the Agents Angle.
Thank you. Thanks, Peter and Jonathan, for having me here.
Thank you. Maria, what drew you to become a football agent as well as a sports lawyer? And what do you enjoy most about your current role in both these areas?
Well, for me, it was a natural step to take to become a licensed FIFA agent, that the most of my work regarding football law is specialized now in football transfers, all operations, but specifically football transfers. So this year in particular, I have a lot of movement, a lot of operations internationally and in the national market also as an advisor, mainly for agents. So I thought that was like the natural step to have my license, since now the new regulations demand it to make the a full job, no? To be able to complete negotiations, to be able to be, I can say, in the play. So that's how I decided to make that step forward.
Maria, Mexican football isn't that well known to a lot of people, even though it has a huge, huge following. But just to give those people who aren't fully aware of Mexican football, can you give us a brief overview of the current state of the football agent industry in Mexico and the main challenges that football agents face there?
Yes, I think that it's a very competitive area. I think that every day there are more people that want to be an agent. I think that the first thought is being an agent is super cool. And as you may know, sometimes it's not that cool. So I think the first point is that many people is interested. I also experienced when applying for the FIFA exam on Federación Mexicana de Fútbol, that I met a lot of people that were applying. You know, some of them told us, like, I'm not an agent, I'm just a lawyer and I'm interested in football, but I haven't done anything. But also, we have a lot of experienced agents that make the industry more interesting, and with a lot of interest also in taking players internationally. So I think that we have a very competitive area here and a lot of experience, as I say. And I think that's something that is difficult now, maybe also for the players, to get to know the agents that work best for them and to realize who are the agents that will perform better for them, no? So I think that's an important thing, to have a credibility and experience.
One of the questions we ask the guests on the agent's angle is that from their experience and what they observe of the football agents industry, if they could describe the football agents world in just one word, what would it be and why?
I would say competitive, for sure, because you can afford to have a bad day. Because sometimes a bad day would translate on a bad negotiation for your client, being a player or a club, no? So I think that's something that we can say in one word. Also, that makes us to be the most professional possible, no? And to use the experience in the best way.
Maria, what kind of qualities do you think are essential for a football agent to be successful in the Mexican football scene? Is it connections? Is it network? Is it reputation? Is it track record of deals?
Yes, for sure. I think that always networking in every area of work is super important. Track record is basic. Sometimes players got interest in agents because they know they have done a good work with a big player or some kind of player. That's important. Hardworking, I think that's an industry that never stops. It's like never stops. So that's quite important. To know the industry, to know how it operates, how to negotiate, which things you need to let go, which things you need to be very careful at. And of course, getting that talent to trust in you, I think that's super important. And to discover also that talent is quite important.
You've advised players, coaches, big Mexican agents from both a legal, obviously now an agency sort of angle. Can you share with us one memorable success story without maybe giving all the privacy away, or achievement from your career as a football agent or sports lawyer in the football space?
Yes, I can share with you guys that this year I worked as a legal advisor from the transfer of the Colombian football player Mateo Uribe. He was on Porto. He went to Al-Sadd to Qatar. It was a really quite interesting operation. His sports agent is Alfredo Rosales, a Mexican agent that brought him first from America to Porto and now this operation. But it was quite interesting because in last year we started working on that, advising on that. We went to Paris to close the physical exams and to be there with the player. Also, I was involved in the negotiations with the club, and it was a really, really nice and interesting operation that I get to work in.
Especially in Europe and even in Australia and Asia, a lot of people are looking at the MLS, Major League Soccer in America, which is your neighbor up north. And a lot of people say the MLS is growing and it's going to have effect on other markets, particularly probably even Mexico, the Liga MX. Has the growth of the MLS in recent years impacted Liga MX? Was it the transfers or is it the players?
Yes, I think that in Mexico, everything that happens in the States impacts us. And that's a good thing also for us, no, in all business. And I think that football is not an exception. And we have experienced how MLS and US soccer is growing and how they are taking action to become better every day, no? So that's an interesting example of something that we can take and do better. Also, for sure, as you say, there's always a lot of interest on transfer to MLS. So that's nice because before there was not that great of interest, but now we have a lot of examples. Messi going there, of course, but we also have Carlos Vela, Chicharito. Chicharito is now not in LA anymore, but we have very, very important players there. And I think that for sure it impacts both ways. So players that are from here that want to play there, and on the other hand. Also, I think that what's going to happen on the next World Cup, close relationship between US and Mexico to implement, obviously, the World Cup implies a lot of work together in the commercial side, marketing side, sports side. That's also a very interesting phenomenon that is occurring. So some of things I can also see that in the marketing and commercial side, we are also learning something there.
Yeah, obviously the MLS will look at Liga MX as even a scouting ground and there'll be transfers in between. Obviously, the MLS is a bit different because as a player, you contract with MLS, unlike the clubs, where in Mexico, the clubs got a lot of autonomy to sign the players they want in particular. How do Mexican agents handle international representation and transfers for Mexican players generally? Quite a few are going to MLS. You mentioned you did an operation into Qatar, but over the years, we haven't seen that many Mexican players go overseas. It was a very strong league for a long time. How do Mexican agents react now to international transfers in the international market?
Yes, I think that it depends also a lot on the agent. But international transfers, I think that it's very specific rules, very specific negotiations. You need to adapt and learn how to do it outside. But in this year, we have two big examples, Edson Álvarez in West Ham, a very important transfer. Also, Santi Jimenez in Feyenoord with Mariel. I think that they are doing a great job maintaining this. Also, as I told you, with Alfredo on the sport, they are doing a lot of good things too. From what I can tell from firsthand, it's a very professional management. We take care of every detail. What's going on with the contract? How are we negotiating? What are the players want? What he needs to move? Because sometimes, yes, football, it's obviously very important, but we have to understand that they have family, they have different things that they need to take care of, the language. There are a lot of things. I think from my experience, the transfers I like the most are in an international level. And it's also important for us to be like well seen and well recognized on clubs out there.
Can we expect to see more players from Mexico coming to Europe, do you think? Because solely from my perspective, one player has had a huge impact on my neck of the woods is Raul Jimenez, both as a player and as a person. Do you think we can expect to see more Mexican players in Europe?
I think so. I think that first is important to keep a track on players of the quality of Santi Jimenez. I think that he has a lot of future there. It's crazy what he's doing at a such young age. Also, Edson Álvarez, I think it's perfect. Well, El Chucky Jimenez, it's also really recognized. But I'm sure that from the next year, most probably in summer, we will have maybe one player in Europe. That's for what I know from my job, from my work. And we need to see how some Mexican stars like El Chino Huerta, how they evolve. I think I'm confident that we are going to see more Mexican players there.
We can't go much further, and we have this in pretty much every episode for the last year. It's been hanging over the football agents industry for pretty much a year now, without mentioning the four letters FFAR, the FIFA Football Agent Regulations. Mm-hmm. What has been the reception to the new FIFA Football Agent Regulations in Mexico? Not just from the agents, but also the clubs, the players, Liga MX, and also the Mexican Football Federation. How are the new regulations being received over there?
I think that from the agent perspective, it meant a lot of work, a lot of actualization, a lot of knowing rules, what to do, what not to do, and for the player to be informed. Because right now, the player maybe like they don't know what's happening in a full, complete way. So it's also our job as legal advisors, agents to our clients to let them know what's going on and to make things according to the rules and for them to have all the information they need. So I think in general, it's a little bit early to know. I will also wait until this next transfer period to see. But yes, it's quite different because in the commission gap, everything changes. So let's see. But in general, I feel like people don't know really how to move because something there will be quite difficult to overcome. So let's see what happens. And I think in January, we will have a better perspective on this.
I think we're all learning and adapting with the change in regulations,
yes,
both nationally and internationally.
Sure.
But as Mexican football continues to grow, mm-hmm, it's already got that huge following. How has the growth of the actual game, the Mexican game, impacted on the strategies and the recruitments and scouting that agents actually do?
Yes, what I consider is that it's quite important to have a clear strategy and to know the profile of the player you are working with. So I think that you need to be super professional to have your strategies and objectives clear, to work hard and to have a team that can deliver. Because as I said before, there's a lot of competition, there's a lot of interest, there's a lot of new agencies and agents, and there's a lot of everything. So you need to give that certainty to your clients, to your players, clubs, etc., with clear objectives and hard work.
Marie, we've seen the dynamic growth also of the Mexican Liga MX Femenil, the women's league, within the last 5-6 years. Are football agencies getting involved with this league and see it as a pathway to bigger leagues like the National Women's Soccer League in America, and then we've got the leagues in England, Germany now growing? Has agencies responded to the market with a massive growth of women's football?
Yes, I think that there's a lot of more interest in feminine football because it's growing every day. That's true. I think that we are a long way ahead still, but for instance, I can tell you that now from my top priorities is start to work more with female players. So I think that's something that a complete or integral agent needs to do. It's necessary also to be more involved, to provide for better services for female players, to give them more opportunities, to help them to negotiate, to close deals. So I think that we are not quite there yet to have a lot of agents or a lot of agencies working with women, but I think that we are starting on that way.
Now, before I go into my final question, we know that some of the big clubs in Mexico, Club America, Cruz Azul, Guadalajara Chivas, Pumas UNAM, I won't go Monterrey, I won't go the other clubs as well. There's a lot of big clubs. Yes. Who are the big agents or agencies in Mexico? Can you name one or two? Because they wouldn't be that familiar in our European or Asian audiences. Is there any names that stand out historically or agents in the football agent space?
Yes, I think that it's always better to talk about what you know and what you work with.
Yes.
So I can give you the example of who I've been assessing in the last year. That is Once Sports. That is an agency that has been growing, that has been working in important transfers as Mateo Zuribe. In the national market, we have, I say we because I have participated on different important transfers. Now, a future star that is Fidel Ambriz is with Alfredo, yeah, super well established. Top players in Monterrey, in National Tigre, in the national team, and working hard to have more transfers internationally. And right now, a really well known and established brand in football. And as I told you, well, the name is Once Sports, and the main agent and CEO there is Alfredo Rosales.
Just for international agents, agents maybe not from the MLS sphere or Latin America, with a lot of Latin American agents, South American agents have got a lot of contacts in Mexico. For agents in Europe and Asia and Africa, if they wanted to do deals, Liga MX, Femenil, even a second division, would they need a local Mexican agent to work with? Is that essential, you think, for international agents who don't have much experience in the Mexican market? Would they need to pair up or cooperate or be a counterparty with a Mexican agent just to understand how things work in Mexico?
Yes, I would highly recommend that. Also, every transfer, every operation is different. But in a general point of view, I think that would be ideal, if not said necessary, because as you say, it's important to know the market, legal aspects. I think it's really important to have someone with experience that can help you navigate that.
And if you had one wish, Maria, for the football agents industry in the future, what would it be?
I think it would may sound weird, but I think to be better appreciated. For the industry to be better known also, because sometimes agents, they are thought as being like the bad ones. But I think that it's important to know the importance of the work of football agents. And that comes with more information, and that comes with better performance, with good results. So I think I would wish for that, to know that it's a really nice, a really demanding job, and it would be nice to be better recognized. I think that would be ideal.
Yes, I think me and Jonathan agree with that, because especially during the transfer window cycles, there's so much on and so much attention to detail. So many things can go wrong.
Yes.
Opinions change day by day. Negotiations change day by day.
Crazy.
Clubs' requirements change day by day. So there's a lot to consider there. But we really appreciate you making time, Maria, to come onto the podcast.
It's been thank
very
you.
Informative and insightful, and really happy to for you to come on and share the agent's insight.
Thanks for having me, and we'll keep in touch.
Thank you, Maria.
Thank you. See you. Bye.
That was a fascinating interview, Jonathan. I know both me and you are very fond of Mexican football, Liga MX. The colorful commentating, the club shirts, the club histories, the stadiums like the Azteca, or one of my favorite stadiums is this Stadio BBVA in Monterrey. Fantastic, near the mountain there. The derbies, Club America, Chivas, UNAM Pumas versus Club America, the Monterrey rivals, FC Monterrey and Tigres, fantastic. And of course, the fans and the players.
And just briefly, as with our chat in last week's episode with Pete Fairchild, that interview with Maria was pre-recorded in December. Obviously, Maria's very busy this time of year as well with the transfer window. And as such, some of the changes to the agent regulatory landscape, such as FIFA circulars 1873 and 1874, weren't known to us at the time. But I will leave it at that and not utter the dreaded four letters or four words that we are trying to avoid this episode.
Yes, we're trying to keep it Mexico focused and positive. And as we're talking about Mexico and Latin American and Mexican players, there's a few articles I want to raise that apply to agency, to players and the leagues. First of all, there was an article in Age Studio on the 14th December this year, actually quite recent, and it's entitled Lilini claims all Argentinians want to play in Liga MX, and caught my eye because Andres Lilini is director of youth teams at Mexican Football Federation, and he boldly claimed that Argentine soccer players aspired to play in Liga MX because it's a very strong league, everyone wants to play there. Even players from Chile, Uruguay, Paraguay, they all want to play there now. Some people say it's because much better paid in Liga MX, American dollars, but I did a bit of research with the CIS. And Mexico is the fourth most popular market of Argentinian players who are playing internationally outside Argentina. It's behind Chile, it's behind Spain. So that's an interesting observation there. I would say it's a compelling market for Argentinians, but it's not always the number one. Now, another article that really caught my eye about Mexican football is its huge demographic upside, the draw card of the Mexican League. There was an article on how Liga MX has captured America, as in the United States of America, hearts and wallets. And it's an article focused on the marketing side that a lot of Mexican Americans who have family ties, been born there, are very much Liga MX, part of the identity, part of themselves. And the article goes into some marketing research that the average Liga MX viewer faced in the US is 35 years old, probably one of the youngest in terms of watching major American sports leagues. And they're very much linked with their clubs. It's a very young fan base, proud and passionate. And some research was done by Steve Culp, director of Kantar Sports Monitor, who mentions that 92% of fans, these young Mexican-American fans, wear the Liga MX logo as a badge. One other short article, it's the Women's League. And the Women's League is booming in Mexico. An article, it's entitled Why Women in NCAA Are Moving to Liga MX Femenil. And NCAA stands for National College Athletics Association, but it's a recent article, 22 of November 2023, by Cesar Hernandez on ESPN. And it mentions that a lot of players who don't get an opportunity in the National Women's Soccer League in the US because they're younger, they didn't get drafted, and we had a recent draft for players from the college scene into the National Women's Soccer League in America, that they're coming to Mexico. It's a strong trend, very common, because you'd be surprised, the Mexican Liga MX Femenil, or the Women's League, has big crowds. A lot of the games are very popular. It's a very fast league. And a lot of players from the NCAA, and may I say from other countries, want to become professionals, and this is a gateway opportunity for them. It's a great environment. There's pro experience. And for agents out there, and this is obviously the agent's angle,
This is a market for women's football. We talk about it's growing in Europe, obviously in parts of Asia, Australia, Australian Women's League there, obviously the American National Women's Soccer League, but Mexico is becoming a very compelling league. And I'll just mention here that the Club America women's team defeated Tottenham Hotspur and AC Milan last year in a Women's Cup tournament.
Yeah, we've spoken in the past about women's football, and I think anybody who denies the growth of women's football and the rate at which it's developing, they're foolish. They must be living in a cave or something, because you can't deny it. And it's a good sign of market trends in football for me in many ways. Now, maybe Liga MX Femenil will be the spark to really ignite that Mexican football and its untapped potential as a whole, because even though it's got that huge following, I still think there's a huge amount of potential there. I don't think people really understand how big the following is, not just in Mexico, but also outside, not least the US. And for me, it hasn't really reached that full potential. So maybe that will be the spark to really push it forward once again and make the whole football world sit up and take note. The surprising thing for me is that I see it as perfect potential for those groups such as City Football Group, Red Bull, 777, for developing a multi-club model. But it doesn't seem Mexico has caught the attention of those multi-club groups and structures as of yet. But definitely exciting, definitely room for growth, room for development, huge potential football-wise, huge potential commercial-wise. And who knows, maybe that first €1 million women's player that many are anticipating in the near future could come from Mexico to Europe. Who knows?
You mentioned multi-club ownership. In fact, I would say Mexico is the most unique in the sense that they've always had multi-club ownership. A lot of big corporations own parts or several of the big clubs and the smaller clubs. So that has also been a culture there already. And that's why maybe external funds or multi-club ownership models or groupings haven't come into Mexico. But I want to focus a little bit just on a couple of final points for agents to take a note of. One is the handshake agreement. There used to be a handshake agreement in Mexico in terms of transfers. It was coined the Pacto de Caballeros, the gentleman's pact, where clubs can decide where players can go for the next move or to retain them. And that gave the clubs previously, pre-2020, a lot of power. Now, in 2020, the rules on transfers and contracts have come in, and they were agreed with the Liga MX and the Players Union and the Federation. And it changed the course of the industry, not just for players, but for agents. Gave more flexibility to move players to clubs they wanted to go to. And that was very important. Also, something else I want to raise in terms of Mexico, they have a system similar to the Bundesliga and La Liga to finalize transfers, an online hub, the Sistema de Integral de Información Deportiva, the SID, serves as a home for all legal documents and processes for transfers, and that would include agent documents as well. So any mandates, when you're working with or agreements, would have to go there. Final point here, there are two approaches to transfers in Liga MX. Mexican players, anyone's been sold or loaned, goes onto that hub system that I just mentioned. In terms of international players coming in, the FIFA RSTP applies. However, the registration windows are a little bit different. It's very strict in Europe. In Mexico, they have their own sort of system because they have two seasons, the Apertura and the Clausura. And a lot of times, international players could come on board to a club in the third or fourth round because of the way the registration periods work. So be mindful of that when you're doing a deal or you're working with someone for a deal in Mexico.
On that point, before we stray into areas of football agent regulations, I think that quite nicely brings us to the end of this episode of the Agents Angle. As we mentioned in recent weeks, we're going to have a change around for the show in terms of scheduling content and format. So we'll bring you news of that in due course. However, as always, keep sending in your comments, questions, queries, suggested topics and guests to the email address questions@theagentsangle.com. They're always welcome. As well as that, continuing to like and share the show and various episodes across social media and leaving reviews on the various podcast platforms. So with that, until the next time, take care of yourselves and brace yourselves for the remainder of this current transfer window, as I think things could be about to heat up a bit.
That's also a bye from me, and hope you enjoyed this episode on Mexico.
The purpose of the Agents Angle podcast is to provide news, information and facilitate discussion on regulatory matters, policies, business trends and issues affecting football agents worldwide. The opinions and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only and should never be considered legal or professional advice. Furthermore, the views expressed by guests are their own and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Thank you for listening.